Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nazir Daf Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Dalid. You'll notice Mishnah in the middle, 21 lines from the top. We begin. Hareini k'Shimshon k'ben Manoach k'Baal Delila. Someone accepts upon himself or vows to be like Shimshon, the son of Manoach, the husband of Delila. The Rabbeinu Tam has a girsa as follows: U kemi sheokar dalsois aza, u kemi shenokru plishtim es einov. Or someone says he wants to be like the one who uprooted the gates of the city of Aza, which of course is a reference to Shimshon. Or to be like the one whom the Philistines gouged out his eyes. Hareze Nozir Shimshon. The result of these different expressions is that the person will be a Nozir like Shimshon. What characterizes a Nozir Shimshon? This will be discussed in the next Mishnah when the Mishnah asks what is the difference between a Nozir Olam and a Nozir Shimshon. We can say at this point, though, that Shimshon was a lifetime Nozir. So if one uses any of these expressions, so he will become just that, a Nozir like Shimshon. The Gemara asks, regarding the language of the Mishnah, Loma li lemisne kol halin. In order for one to become a Nozir like Shimshon, why were all these descriptions necessary? Tzrichi. So in order to conclude that he would be a Nozir like Shimshon of biblical fame, you need all of these expressions. And what do we mean by all of these? So let's go on in the Gemara. Di'i Omar Hareini k'Shimshon. If a person would have said, I am going to be like Shimshon, Havi Amino Shimshon Achrina, I would have thought he's referring to some other Shimshon. If you open a phone book, you'll find many people with the name Shimshon. It's not clear what he would have been saying had he just said that. Komash Malon Keben Manoach. Therefore, the Mishnah adds that if he's interested in accepting upon himself Nazirus like that of Shimshon of biblical fame, he would have to have said K'Shimshon Ben Manoach. V'itono keben Manoach. And had he said that, now some girsos, it appears maybe the Tosfos has a following girsa as well, that the Gemara at this point is saying that had he said, I would be like Shimshon ben Manoach, have amino, I would have thought, iko de miskeri hachi, there are other people out there, Shimshon ben Manoach. Therefore, komash malon kibal delila. Therefore, once again, following the Tosfos interpretation, in order for him to accept, and for us to be clear that he's accepting the type of Nazirus that Shimshon of biblical fame practiced, he would have to say, Hareini k'Shimshon ben Manoach k'Baal Delilah. I am like Samson, the son of Manoach, the husband of Delilah. Alternatively, he could have said, Ukemi shenokru plishtim es einov. Or he could have said, like we saw in the Mishnah, Kemi sheokar dalsois aza. That those expressions on their own would have been clear. There are no other people of that having that fame, i.e., that they uprooted the gates of Aza, or that their eyes were gouged out by the Philistines. So at this point, it would seem that there are three expressions that would lead one to becoming a Nazir Shimshon, the first being, had he said, I would like to be like Shimshon ben Manoach Baal Delilah, or I'd like to be like the one that was Oikir Dalsis Azah, or I would like to be like the one whose eyes were gouged out by the Philistines. The Mishnah. Ma bein Nazir Oilam the Nazir Shimshon. Having said already that Shimshon was a lifetime Nazir, what is the difference between someone who accepts upon himself the status of a Nazir Olam versus that of a Nazir Shimshon? So the Mishnah answers, Nazir Olam, Hichbid Sairo, Meko Bataro, Mevi Sholosh Behemoth. A person who accepts upon himself Nazir Olam status, if his hair becomes lengthy or literally heavy, he can cut the hair to reduce the load of hair on his head, and in doing so he'll have to bring three sacrifices, three behemoths, three animal offerings, which is characteristic of a Nazir when he takes his haircut. Ve'im nitma mevi korban tumah, and if he, the Nazir Olam, becomes defiled to the dead, so then he has to bring the relevant sacrifices. Nazir Shimshon. Now, in contrast, the Nazir Shimshon hichbid sairo eino mekel. His hair might get heavy, like very long. He can't reduce it. Ve'im nitma eino mevi korban tumah, and if he becomes defiled, he does not bring a korban of tumah. The korban tumah being two birds and a guilt offering. Two birds, an oif, that's a chatos, oif, it's an oila, and an animal, that's an osham. The Gemara asks, regarding the Mishnah asked, what is the difference between a Nazir Olam and a Nazir Shimshon, but we haven't heard that there exists such a thing, such a practice as a Nazir Olam. Before you can ask what is the difference between these two items, you have to establish that they both exist. So, Nazir Olam Man Dekar Shmei, who made any mention of the existence of such a practice known as Nazir Olam? The Gemara answers, Chisurei Mechasra V'Hachi Katani. The Mishnah is actually taught in a terse fashion, and in order to appreciate its real meaning, its real understanding, the following would have to be spelled out. Ha'oimer ha'reini nozir olam ha'reizen nozir olam. One who accepts upon himself permanent Nazirite status, he becomes thus. Ma bein nozir olam le'nozir shimshon. Now that we've established that there is such a practice known as nozir olam, we can ask the question that we saw in the Mishnah: what is the difference between a nozir olam and a nozir shimshon? And the nozir shimshon, we've already established, and we know that from the scriptures, that he was a permanent nazir. So what's the difference between these two? Nazir olam hichbet saro meko betaro mevi sholosh behemos vim nitmo mevi korban tumo. Just like we saw in the Mishnah. Nazir shimshon hichbet saro eino meko betar vi eino, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, vi eino mevi korban tumo. The Gemara infers, korban hu delo maisi, Avol Nazirus Chayli Ole. The Mishnah is telling us that if he becomes defiled, so he doesn't bring the korban of a Nazir Tameh, but the acceptance of Nazir Shimshon, as the Nazirus of Shimshon, does set in. He does become a Nazir. Moni Masnisen. Well, with that having been said, according to whom is our mission? In other words, our mission is authored by which Tana? Lo Rebbe Yehuda v'lo Rebbe Shimon. It doesn't appear to be consistent with either of these Tanaic opinions. And we're beginning a long question, as you can see, according to our markings. So according to our mission, and the topic heading on the side, in the margin of the Gemara reads, Lefi Mishnah Seinu, according to our mission, in Ziru Shimshon Nitan Lekabel, it is possible to accept that type of the Ziru Sumashma, the heter tumo lemesim hu rak b'dieved, and it appears from our Mishnah that defilement to the dead is acceptable, but only post facto, not as a first choice with regard to someone who is a Nazir Shimshon. So with that having been said, Moni Masnisen, who would have said all of that? Namely, that you can become a Nazir Shimshon, and that there exists a primary prohibition of the Nazir Shimshon defiling himself to the dead. So as we saw in the Gemara, that doesn't seem to conform to either the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda nor Rabbi Shimon. Tesanya, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Nozir Shimshon, Mutter Letame Lemesim. Here you see, not like what was implied by the Mishnah, that a Nozir Shimshon is allowed to defile himself to the dead. Shekein Motzino B'Shimshon Shenidma. We found in the biblical passage featuring Shimshon that he defiled himself to the dead. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ha'omir Nozir Shimshon Lo Omar Klum. And Rabbi Shimon taking the other extreme, that one who says, I am a Nozir like Shimshon, said nothing. Shelo Motzino B'Shimshon Sheyotzas Nozirus Mipiv. We don't find that Shimshon himself, of biblical fame, accepted upon himself Nazirus. According to Rabbi Shimon, then it appears that in order for Nazirus to take hold, it would have to be some practice that one accepts upon himself. We don't find that Shimshon nor his father accepted upon them. Shimshon, in the case of his father, a father has a right to impose Nazirus on his son. But we don't find that having taken place in the case of Shimshon. So, money, our Mishnah is in accordance with whom? E Rabbi Yehuda Ha'omar Afilu L'Chadchila. If our Mishnah were to be Rabbi Yehuda, he said he can, as a first choice, the Nozir Shimshon, as a first choice, can defile himself to the dead. Umasnisin Kotoni Im Nitma. And our Mishnah states it in the post facto fashion, that if he became Tomei, but not that a Nozir Shimshon is allowed to defile himself. And E Rabbi Shimon, if our Mishnah were in accordance with Rabbi Shimon, Ha'amar Lo Chai Lo Alei Nazirus Klal, according to Rabbi Shimon, a person who declares himself a Nozir Shimshon has said nothing. But our Mishnah doesn't say like that. Li'oilam Rabbi Yehuda he. In truth, our Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda. The Aidi de Kotoni Gabi Nozir Oilam Im Nitma. Since the Mishnah taught with regard to the Nozir Olam defilement as a post facto situation, if he became Tomei, not as a first choice. So, to maintain, we'll say, the similarity of style, of literary style, Tononami Gabi Nozir Shimshon Im Nitma. So, the Mishnah taught in the context of Nozir Shimshon similarly, if he became Tomei. But in fact, there is that difference, that a Nozir Olam is not allowed to, as a first choice, expose himself to defilement of the dead, whereas a Nozir Shimshon, even according to our Mishnah, like Rabbi Yehuda, is allowed to initially expose himself as a first choice, if he should so desire, to defilement to the dead. At this point, we raise a question. It lasts a few lines, and on the side of our Gemara under the Tat Nosei being a sub-topic heading, we've written, Nisayon lahamid machlokes hatanoim bechalus nozir shimshon kemachlokes tanoim achirim. There's an attempt in our Gemara to parallel our machlokes tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, regarding nozir shimshon, is it a practice that takes hold, and parallel to another machlokes tanoim beinyan hamatfis nidro bevachor, someone who expressly dedicates some some vow to be parallel to a bechor. For example, hare olai kibechor, a person says that he accepts upon himself that a particular item is like to be like a bechor. Bechor is a firstborn male animal, when in reality a person experiences a firstborn kosher variety male animal born in his herd or in his flock, it is holy. It is in the time of the Beis HaMikdash to be given to a Kohen who would bring it as a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. The Bechor, technically speaking, is holy upon birth, even without your intervention, even without your declaration of sanctity. So we continue with the note on the side. We want to, as we said, parallel our machlokas tanoim regarding Nazir Shimshon. Is it a reality? To a machlokas tanoim regarding someone who compares an item to a bechor, klomar. Hatzorech lahatpis nidro dafka bedavar hanodur. For a neder, for a vow to take hold, is it absolutely necessary to parallel the item that you are, let us say, trying to forbid as a vow to an item that itself was previously made prohibited through a type of sanctification or a vow? When you sanctify something or dedicate something to the Holy Temple, so you are responsible for its prohibition for personal use. This might sound a bit abstract, but as we go on in the Gemara using examples, this will become clearer. So now, as we said, we have a question. It lasts a few lines. Lema bepluto dahani tanoi komifugi. Can we say that the machlokes of Yehuda and Reb Shimon, Reb Yehuda acknowledging Nazir Shimshon as a reality, Reb Shimon saying it doesn't exist, parallels the following machlokes tanoim? Disnan, hare olai kibachor. A person would say, for example, I accept upon myself this loaf of bread to be like a bechor. Maybe we should say, just by way of general introduction, that if someone says hare olai kikar zu ke korban shlomim, that would become a vow. Or hare olai ke korban ola. If a person parallels an item, he says, I accept upon myself that this chair is to be upon me like a korban ola. A korban ola, an ola sacrifice, is a sacrifice, is an animal that you made prohibited. You sanctified it, and hence it's not available for personal use. That takes hold. What happens if you say, you are olai kikarzu, I accept upon myself that this bread is to be to me like a bechor? Rabbi Yankiv oiser. Rabbi Yankiv says such a vow takes hold. Rabbi Yossi matir. Rabbi Yossi says such a vow is meaningless. My lav. So now, with that having been said, can we say the following? That Rabbi Yehuda, who acknowledged the existence of a Nazir Shimshon, savar lo k'Rabbi Yankiv. He holds like Rabbi Yankiv that when one declares an item to be upon himself like a bechor, it takes hold. D'yomar lo bo'inon davar hanidar. That in establishing a vow, you don't need to parallel the item. We spoke about a loaf of bread or a chair or whatever. You don't need to parallel it to something that was made prohibited by you. The item that you are currently prohibiting doesn't have to be molded or patterned after something else that is also made prohibited by you. For Rabbi Shimon Savar Lo K'Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, who said that Nazir Shimshon doesn't exist, he would hold like Rabbi Yossi Domar. That holds that in order for a vow to take hold, bo'inon dover hanidar, you have to parallel the item you want to prohibit right now to something else that becomes usher through, becomes prohibited through your intervention. So, as we said in the at the beginning of this question, can we make this parallel between the two Tanaic controversies? The Gemara says, lo, that is not the case. The Kule Alma, Rabbi Yankiv and Rabbi Yossi, both of them, bo'inon dover hanidar, they say that in order for something to be prohibited through the mechanism of a vow, you would have to parallel it to something that itself is made prohibited by your intervention, by your declaration. And therefore, Shimshon, who we never saw, became also through personal acceptance, through their having, through Shimshon having accepted upon himself a vow of Nizirus. So Rabbi Yankiv and Rabbi Yossi would both, between themselves, would say that a person who declares himself a Nazir Shimshon, he has said nothing. Well, if that's the case, if they agree that you need to parallel your neder, your vow, to something that itself is nidar, that something else that you declare or you make usur, then why does Rabbi Yankiv say, in the case of Bechor, which we said, you don't really make usur, it's born usur? Why does such a vow, when you parallel something to a Bechor, why does that take hold? The shiny Gabi Bechor, the case of Bechor is different. Tziv Bei Lashem. There's a reference in the Pasuk to God's name. And since Lashem appears in the Pasuk, it says, the Pasuk says, Ish ki yidor neder Lashem. And that Lashem word, a name that appears in the context of vow making, is l'rabois es habachor, that comes to include paralleling items to a bechor, even though a bechor is not a real davar hanidar, but it's an exception. It's an example of something that can be used to formulate a vow. As we said, I want a person prohibits upon himself the use of a chair like a bechor. Reb Yossi, who said that paralleling something to a Bechor is useless, it's futile. Hahu Lashem, the name Lashem in the Pasuk that we cited, Miboyale, he needs it for something else, L'rabois Chatos V'Osham, to include as a useful vow model, paralleling something to a sin offering or a guilt offering. Now, let's just point out that a korban chatas or korban osham are not voluntary offerings. They're not a type of sacrifice that you electively sanctify. Electively meaning that through your own, let's say, good nature, decide to sanctify. If one sinned, so then he's required, assuming it's that type of sin that warrants these kind of sacrifices, so then he's obligated to bring these sacrifices. So the Chatas and Asham, as the Gemara will go on to point out, have a certain unique status in the realm of vow making, but suffice it to say that Rabbi Yossi does find value in the Lashem word in the Pasuk to expand the models to which one can parallel his vow to a Chatas or Asham. Uma Royis L'Rabbis Chatas V'Asham L'Hoitzias B'Chor. Turning to Rabbi Yossi, we ask, why is it that he's willing to accept the Chatas and Asham as serving as a model for a vow, as a mold according to which one can parallel the item to those things and exclude a Bechor? Answer, Mar Bani Chatas V'Asham. The Chatas and Asham can serve as the model for a vow, Shekein Matpison B'Neder, because those animals or those kind of sacrifices you must expressly dedicate. That's Matpison B'Neder. You must expressly dedicate them to be thus. In other words, if you violated that type of sin that warrants the bringing of a Chatas or Asham, you would have to initiate the sanctification of animals in your flock to serve as a Chatas or Asham. Umotzi ani es ha-bechor, shein matpisa b'neder, and I exclude though the Bechor. The Bechor has no connection to vowing. It has no connection to any, let's say, human initiative in terms of imposing prohibition. It's born that way. It's born prohibited. For Rabbi Yankiv Omar Loch, Rabbi Yankiv tells us, Bechor nami matpisa beneder hu. The Bechor does have an element of dedication associated with it. The Sanya, as the following source reveals, Shelbeis Rabbeinu Omru, in the house of Rabbi Yudah Hanossi, it was said, Minayin l'noilad lo b'chor b'soch edro shem mitzvah lov lahakdisho. From where do we know that someone that has a firstborn male animal born in his flock, that he has, that there is a mitzvah upon him to sanctify it? Shenema, the pasuk says, Hazochor takdish. The male you shall sanctify. For Rabbi Yossi Omalach, Rabbi Yossi, who denied any vow value to a Bechor, he will tell you, Nehi de mitzvah akdisha, granted that you have fulfilled a precept if you sanctify it. However, lo makdish le mi lo kadosh, and if you didn't initiate sanctity upon the Bechor, would it not be holy? It certainly would be holy anyway. The Gemara asks, Gabi Nozir Nami Hok Siv Lashem. You find the term Lashem found in the context of Nozir. So why then would Rabbi Yankiv of Bechor, who Rabbi Yankiv, who we saw above, was willing to accept as a legitimate vow the paralleling to a Bechor, why not say that Lashem by Nozir includes Nozir Shimshon? The Gemara answers, Ahu miboyele lichrisanya, the Lashem term that you find in the case of Nizirus has already a separate function. I need it for the following. We're going to read a Tanaic source. There's a story in this source, and we're going to see that the Lashem teaches us concerning one who accepts upon himself Nazirus in a truly Lashem Shomayim fashion, a truly holy, benevolent, heavenly motivated fashion. Omar Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was from the very beginning of the Tanaic period, and he lived during the time, of course, of the Beis Hamikdash. He says, Miyomai lo ochalti oshem nozir tomei chutz mi odom echad. I never partook of the guilt offering brought by a Nozir who became defiled to the dead, with the exception of one case, one person. Shaboy lai min adorom, a fellow came for me from the south. Yefei naim v'toiv roi, a nice looking fellow, nice eyes, pleasant appearance. Ukvutsois of stuos lo taltalim, and he had locks of hair that were set up in rows on his head. Omarti lo benima royis l'shachi se'er nozeh. I asked him, "No, and I know that you're a nozir. A nozir at the end of his nazir's period has to cut his hair." And I asked him, "What is it that motivated you to accept nazirus that you now have to cut such beautiful hair?" Omar li. So the man said, "Roya hoyisi lavi beiri. I was a shepherd for my father in my town. Volachti v'shoiv mayim min amayon, and I went to draw water from the spring. V'nistakalti b'babua shali, and I gazed upon the reflection, my reflection in the water. Upochaz yitzri olai, and my evil inclination got the better of me. I saw in the reflection such a good-looking man. Ubikesh l'tardani min ha'olam, and with that emotion, it sought to cast me out of this world. Omarti lo, I said to it, to the reflection. So I said to myself, Reka, you empty one, mipnei ma tom izgoy ba'olam she'eino yishelcha. How is it that you become so overcome with feelings of haughtiness in a world that doesn't belong to you? She'soivcho yisrimu v'teilas, that whose end is decomposition and worms. Ha'avoida, this is an expression of a vow. She'agalechicha l'shamayim, that I'm going to shave you, I'm going to remove all the hair, all the beauty, for the sake of heaven. Well, this is what the man told me, said Shimon HaTzadik. Omadeti v'neshachtiv al roisha, I stood up and I kissed him on his head. Omarti lo kamoyscha yarbi nazirim b'Yisrael, like you, there shall increase in numbers nazirim amongst the Jewish people. Alecha hakosav oimer, regarding someone like you, the pasuk says, "Ish ki afli lindor neder nazir lahazir l'Hashem," a person who vows to accept upon himself nazirus for purely heavenly purposes. So Shimon HaTzadik tells us a story about a man whose nazirus was so pure in its intention, so heavenly motivated, that even though they experienced defilement, he had no hesitation to partake of his sacrifices, as opposed to a common situation of nazir defilement, where one could be suspect that a person would come to regret having accepted the nazirus, because upon defilement, as we've mentioned in previous shiurim, he elongates the nazirus period, and he might come to regret the whole thing, and bringing sacrifices in with feelings of regret borders on the sin of chulin lazor, bringing animals that aren't even fit to be brought as sacrifices, and the likes of Shimon HaTzadik wouldn't want to be involved with eating of animals of sacrificial meat like that. But someone like this, who is so heavenly motivated, all of those concerns about possible regret, even though they become defiled, fall away. And this is all learned from the Lashem that's in the Pasuk of Nazirus. So Lashem is not going to include Nazir Shimshon as a means of Nazirus, as far as even Rabbi Yankiv is concerned. So though Rabbi Yankiv is willing to accept modeling something after a Bechor because of the Lashem in that Pasuk that we cited earlier, but he's not going to include Nazir Shimshon as a Nazirus option. We continue in the Gemara. V'Shimshon lav Nazir Havei. Is it really so, as we've been assuming along the way, that Shimshon did not become a Nazir through standard vow procedures? V'oksiv, the pasuk in the case of Shimshon in the book of Judges, Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel, it says, Ki Nazir Elikim Yeh Hanar Min Habeten. Now, the thinking at this point is, as far as the Shimshon story is concerned, that an angel appeared and told the father of Shimshon to impose on your son Nazirus. And if that would have been done, if that would have been the actual story, so then Shimshon is an example of something accepted through standard vow methods. Why then have we been treating Shimshon as an example of something that's not a Dover HaNidar? The Gemara says, in fact, Shimshon was not a Nazir through standard vow acceptance procedures. Hasam Malachu Dekomar, there, in the case of Shimshon, it was the angel of God that declared that Shimshon will be a Nazir without any statement of Nazirus acceptance either from Shimshon or his father. So Shimshon was a Nazir, but that was some type of, we'll say, divine declaration, as opposed to a personal human acceptance as such. Does Nazir Shimshon exist? So we saw, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Nazir Shimshon exists as Nazirus, and that is only a result of a pasuk that comes to include Nazir Shimshon as a, we'll say, as a reality. The explanation we just gave regarding Shitas Rabbi Yehuda can be found in the Rush, though there are other explanations as far as how Rabbi Yehuda comes to the conclusion that Nazir Shimshon is a reality. Let's continue in the Gemara. Uminolon di'itmi lemesim. From where do we know that Shimshon defiled himself to the dead? As we mentioned earlier, the difference between a Nazir Olam and a Nazir Shimshon was that the Nazir Olam is not allowed to, as a first choice, defile himself to the dead, whereas Nazir Shimshon can, and that would be based on the fact that Shimshon, the original Nazir Shimshon, had defiled himself to the dead. Where do we see evidence of that? On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, a triangle appears, and you'll see it appears in alternating directions. This is a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take of the Gemara. So with the point facing up, Nisyonis Lanus L'Sheila, these are attempts to answer the question, Minolim de Shimshon Nitme L'Mesim, from where do we know that Shimshon of biblical fame defiled himself to the dead? The inverted triangle represents Dechios rejections of whatever was suggested. So we continue with the Gemara. After having asked from where do we know that he was Metamela Mesim, I Leimo Midichtiv Belechi Achamori Kesi Elefish. In the Pasuk, it's Shimshon announces that with the jaw of a donkey I killed 1,000 men. The Gemara says that doesn't show that he defiled himself to the dead, though. Dilmo giruye gori behu velo noga behu. Maybe he hurled the jaw of the donkey toward them and through that killed them. But that doesn't mean he had actual contact with them, thereby killing them and thereby becoming defiled. Elo mehacha. From the following. Vayach mehem shloishim ish vayikach es chalitzosam. He killed 30 men and took their garments. So it would seem from here that first he killed them, they were dead, and then he removed their garments. He would have had to come into contact or overshadow them, thereby becoming defiled to the dead. The Gemara says, not so. Dilmo ashlechinun beresha vahodar katlinon. Maybe, as was well known, he was a very strong warrior-like figure, that he actually stripped them first and then killed them, so that his contact with them after they were dead is not necessarily demonstrated in this source. The Gemara says that's not so, though. Vayach vayikach siv. The order of the pasuk indicates first he smote them and then he took their garments, so that he did become defiled to the dead, as this pasuk indicates. The Gemara says, no, it's not convincing. V'dilma goisesim shavinon. Maybe he mortally wounded them, creating a goses stase. Goses is people in the throes of death. Not actually dead yet, but in the throes of death. They were in that state when he stripped them, thereby avoiding defilement. And only later did they actually die. So how do you know that Shimshon defiled himself to the dead? Ela Gemara Gemiri La. It's an oral tradition. We don't have solid scriptural evidence to that effect, but we do know through this oral tradition. Now, the Gemara reverts back to the topic of the Nazir Olam. The Nazir Olam Hecha Ksiv. Regarding a Nazir Olam, where do you see that he is allowed to reduce the hair burden upon his head and bring the three animal offerings that accompany that cutting of hair. Tesanya. So we have a Tanaic source, and on the side we have the Nosei Mivne heading, the topic heading and structural note. Number one, Nazir Olam Hechoksiv. Where is there scriptural reference to the Nazir Olam? And as we added allowance of cutting the hair and then the bringing of the three sacrifices. And the diamonds that you see throughout this source, which continues on to Daf Hey Omid Aleph, are Shitos Binyan Zmane Giluach Shel Nazir Olam, the time frame within which a Nazir Olam is allowed to reduce his hair burden. So the source, Rebbe Omer, Avshalom Nazir Olam Hoya. Avshalom, the son of King David, was a Nazir Olam. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayimi Ketz Arboim Shona, Vayomer Avshalom Elam Melech, and it was after 40 years. Later, the Gemara will ask, this 40 years started at what point in time? Here it says at the end of the 40 years. Beginning with what? Okay, that we'll discuss later. So it was at the end of 40 years, Vayomer Avshalom Elam Melech, and Avshalom said to his father, the king, Elcho no vashalem es nidri asher nadarti l'ashem b'chevron. And I want to go and fulfill my vow that I vowed in Chevron. Tosfos explains that a stam neder, an unqualified vow, implies nazirus. So from this we see that he, Avshalom, had accepted upon himself nazirus. And the trip to Chevron was in order for him to take his haircut and bring the sacrifices, the three sacrifices. This, of course, is at a time in history before the Beis Hamikdash had been set up. Umigaleach echod l'shnei moser chodesh. Rebbe tells us, this is Rebbe's opinion, and that is that the Nazir Olam reduces his hair burden once every 12 months, once a year. Shenemar, Voyomiketz Yomim Liyomim. Once again, the pasuk in that very context involving Avshalom. The Gemara continues at the top of Hey Omid Aleph, V'yolif Yomim Yomim Mibote Ore Choma. The term Yomim that you find by Avshalom is learned from the topic of houses in walled cities. Ma hosam yud beis chodesh, af kan yud beis chodesh. Just like the topic of houses in walled cities, the halacha concerning those houses states that if a person sells a house in a walled city, he can buy it back from the purchaser within 1 year of his sale. However, if the house that was sold remains in the hands of the purchaser more than a year, the original buyer cannot force its resale back to him. So the law concerning Boter Choma is 1 year. Within 1 year, you can force the resale back to the original owner. And the Pasuk there says, Yomim Tie Gulaso. That Pasuk is quoted in the Rashi as well. So just like over there by Boter Choma, it's a 12-month halacha, so to hear the Nazir Olam haircut time frame is every 12 months, because here too you see the word yomim. Rav Noiroi Oimer Megaleach Achas L'Shloishim Yom. He has a different time frame, once every 30 days. Rav Yosi Oimer Megaleach Merav Shabbos L'Erav Shabbos. The Nazir Olam is entitled to reduce his hair, to cut his hair every week. From Friday to Friday, shekein motzinu b'vnei melachim shemegalchin me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. That is the practice, that's the custom of princes to cut their hair once a week. And now we go over the opinions that we saw, my time of the Rebbe, what's the basis of Rebbe's opinion of once every 12 months? Well, we said, Yolif Meibote Or Yechoma. He learns from the law concerning houses sold within walled cities. Vaha Rebbe Hudomar Ein Yomim Pusin Mishnayim. But one second, Rebbe, within the same context of Bote Ore Choma, said that the word Yomim is the plural form of the word Yom. Yom is a day. Yomim would be 2 days. So if you see the word Yomim in a plural form, it's no less than two. And what Rebbe is referring to is that a person who sells a house to a purchaser in a walled city, you know, it's a house in a walled city sold to a purchaser, it shall remain in the hands of the purchaser for 2 days. That means within 2 days you cannot force the resale of that house. So if this be the case, so then let us say that the Nozir Olam can take a haircut every 2 days. Shall we say that? The Gemara says no. Hai Gezeira Shava Mishum Kovid Gomir. The Gezeirah Shava of Yomim Yomim, the word comparison involving Yomim Yomim, was a word comparison within the context of overgrown hair, of heaviness or extended length of hair. Ubishnei Yomim Leko Koivu, within 2 days, you don't experience increased growth of hair. So that's patently rejected as a possible alternative meaning of Yomim, as far as the Gezeirah Shava and Rebbe are concerned. So therefore you're left with the other halacha of Bater Choma, namely that the buyback, if the original seller is interested, must take place within a year. On the side, we have an explanation of this marking scheme that you see. Just by skimming ahead in the Gemara, you see houses and double underlines repeated. So under the Mivneh heading, we've written Hatzos, Chilufios. These are alternative suggestions. B'shitasa Sherebi, within Rebbe's opinion, Shaloma Gzereshavi Yomim Yomim Beinyan Zmanim Shemutu Lenozir Olam Lahokil Sairo. We saw the word comparison involving Yomim Yomim. According to Rebbe, it tells us that a Nozir Olam can reduce his hair burden once a year. Could Rebbe not actually have learned a word comparison with leading to a different conclusion? So we saw one suggestion already, that every 2 days. Well, we rejected that because the whole purpose of this word comparison was within the context of overgrown hair, COVID. COVID means heaviness of hair. And that's not something that one experiences within 2 days. Well, the Gemara continues, V'eimah shnei shonim dichtiv, maybe yomim means at the end of 2 years, that only once every 2 years can the Nozir Olam take his haircut dichtiv. The Pasuk says, V'yi miketz shnosayim yomim. So you see in Sefer Bereishis the term yomim appearing in the context of after 2 years. The Gemara responds, that's not going to change Rebbe's point of view. Why? Donin yomim shenimoim shonim mi yomim shenimoim shonim. I have, in the case of Avshalom, who was a Nazir Olam, the word yomim without it being coupled with the word shonim. And therefore, in the case of Bote Ore Choma, I find a similar phenomenon. V'al yochiach ze shiyesh imo shonim. And do not let prove this pasuk from Bereishis Perek Mem Aleph, where it's true you see the word yomim, but it's coupled with the word shonim, shnosayim yomim. So it's less, let's say, it's less parallel, less similar to the case of, or to the appearance of the word yomim by the Nozir Olam. Question, v'eimo shloshim yom. Maybe Yomim is a reference to a 30-day period. Once every 30 days he could take his haircut. Dichtiv ad chodesh Yomim. Here you have the word Yomim in the context of 1 month. The Gemara says, no, this is not going to influence Rebbe either. Donin yomim sheni moyem chadoshim mi yomim sheni moyem chadoshim. I would prefer to maintain the similarity of yomim as it appears by Nazir Olam to another case where yomim appears without any, without chadoshim attached to it, like you find by the Botei Rechoyma. And do not allow this to prove what Yomim means, because here in this pasuk just cited by Midvar Perek Yud Aleph, you have the word Yomim coupled with Chodesh. So again, it's not the same as the word Yomim as it appears by Avshalom and the Nazir Olam, where it was Yomim without Chodesh. Question: V'yemo mehacha? Maybe we should learn Yomim from the following. Here is a pasuk that deals with the daughter of Yiftach. Yiftach was one of the judges during the period of the Shoftim, and in the context of the daughter of Yiftach, without getting into the entire storyline that you find in the book of Judges, we can just continue with the verses themselves. It says there, Miyomim Yomima, and as Rashi explains, the friends, the girls of Israel who were friendly with this woman, the daughter of Yiftach, they visited her miyomim yomima. They visited her four times a year. If you take a year and you divide it into four parts, you get 3 months each section. So they visited her four times a year. That's miyomim yomima. Yomim, it seems like you have the word yom doubled twice. It's 2 times 2 is 4. So they visit her 4 times a year. That means every 3 months. And therefore, if you were to use this as the source for what yomim means, and transfer it to the case of the Nazir Olam, the Nazir Olam would take his haircut once every 3 months. Not like what Rebbe said, once a year. So why is it that Rebbe chooses to learn Nazir Olam for Botei Orichoma, leading to the conclusion of once a year and not from here? So the Gemara has a couple of answers, two answers. Number one, Donin Yomim Mi Yomim, V'ein Donin Yomim Mi Yom, V'ein Donin Yomim Mi Yomima. We want to keep the similarity as tight as possible, so I'll compare the word yomim to the other context where you find that same word, yomim, and I'm not going to learn yomim that you find by the Nazir Olam from a pasuk where the word yomimo applies. It's a different word. The Gemara asks, umai nafka mina, what difference does it make if the word is exactly the same or not exactly the same? V'otona debei Rabbi Shmuel. There's a very brief Tanaic source in which you see a comparison between two points within the context of the laws of a house stricken with leper with tzaras. It says v'shav ha-kayin u'bo ha-kayin. So in one pasuk the word v'shav appears, and the other pasuk the word bo. They're different words, and we learn zuhi shiva zuhi bia. The laws that apply in one case apply in the other case. Once again, we're avoiding getting into the details behind the laws of tzaras as referred to there in the pasuk. So we see that the exact similarity of words is not the all-important factor in establishing gzeira shava, word comparison. So then why is it that just because by the Bas Yiftach in Shoftim, in the book of Judges, you see the word Yomimo, can we not say, let us learn from there to the Nazir Olam that he takes haircut once every 3 months? The Gemara answers, Hani mili hecha deleko de domile. This is true that we don't insist on exact similarity when you don't have any other competition for the word comparison. But in a case where you have a word, in our case, yomim, and we don't know exactly what it means by the Nazir Olam, and I have a choice to compare it to topic number one where I see the exact same word, like bote orechoma, which would lead me to say once a year, or to compare it to another topic, like by the Bas Yiftach, where the word isn't the same, exactly the same, I would rather compare yamim to the topic of Boter Chomer, where the exact same word appears. So just to repeat this point, yes, it's true we have flexibility in terms of exactness, but that's when I don't have an alternative source to which to compare it. But where I have an alternative source to which to compare it, and the words in those two cases are exactly the same, I would opt for that and abandon the comparison that would not be exactly the same. E boyes amo. Another answer, another approach to why I'm not going to learn from the Bas Yiftach, which we saw a reference to four times a year she was visited by her friends, and the word Yomima, the reason I'm not going to learn from there is Minoya Dino de Choltalse Tlosa Yarchin Chad Zimna, who says that it was an equal division of 3 months, four times a year. Who says that each visit was after 3 months? It's true that in the course of the year she was visited by her friends four times, but who says it was four equal divisions of the year? Dilma arba zimni b'shasa, arba, maybe the four times a year is as follows. Arba yarchin chad zimna, train yarchin b'chad zimna. After 4 months, she was visited once, and then after 2 months, a second time. After four more months, a third time. And after 2 months, the fourth time. In other words, unequal time gaps that established the visitation. So the reason that we're not going to learn from the pasuk of miyomim yomima with the bas yiftach is simply because we don't have a guarantee, we don't know for sure what the gaps in time were that the words yomim yomima indicate. So if I have something that's unsure, and I have the other source, the case of the Bote Orechoma, where it is sure, I'm going to learn from, I'll take the sure bet, so to speak, and learn Nazir Olam once a year from Bote Orechoma, and I'm not going to learn the Nazir Olam haircut time frame from a source where the time gaps aren't really clear. And now we go on with a quote from the second opinion above. The arrow to the side helps you to find where it was. Rabbi Nehoroi Omer, Megaleach Achas L'Shloishim Yom. According to Rabbi Nehoroi, the Nazir Olam is entitled to lessen his hair burden, take a haircut once every 30 days. My Taimo Gabi Koihanim, Mishum Di'iko Koived. Why is it that we find Koihanim taking a haircut once every 30 days? In other words, before a Kohen can serve in the Beis HaMikdash, he must not have a hair growth on his head of more than 30 days. So, just to keep things simple, we say that a Kohen Hedyot must take a haircut every 30 days. And that's because of COVID, because 30 days of hair growth represents a burden of hair. Hachinami Ika Koved. So too here by the Nazir Olam, when he reaches a point that the hair is heavy upon his head, so he is entitled to take the haircut. But not within that time, not less than 30 days, because like by the coin, they haven't reached a situation of it being called COVID. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Megalech Mer of Shabbos, Ler of Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi was the third opinion that we saw in the source above. The haircut of the Nazir Olam can be once a week, from Friday to Friday. My Iko Binei Lishar Achoi. What's going to be the difference between Avshalom, who was also a Ben Melech, he was a prince, and any other prince, any other Ben Melech? there's a Tosfos in the middle that says Ma'iko binei l'shar achoi v'im tomar. You might ask v'neimo diko binei. There's an obvious different korbonos. The need to bring sacrifices to who mevi he as a nozir taking a haircut has to bring sacrifices v'lohein, not them. They just out of cosmetic purposes are taking their haircut every Friday. The Yesh Lomar, the answer to this question is Dochi Komar. When the Gemara is asking its question, it's asking it as follows: Ma'iko b'nei b'tiglechas. The Komar krov ha'imiketz yomim asher yigaleach mashma de b'tiglechas hoya me'acher. The pasuk seems to indicate that you see a difference between Avshalom and his other brothers within the haircut itself, so that. Of course there are other differences, but within the haircut itself, where do you see a difference? So the Gemara answers. Number one, Yom Tov Shechalios Bamtzu Shabbos. A case of Yom Tov, a holiday falling out in the middle of a week. Bamtzu Shabbos, where Shabbos means, in this case, a week. In such a case, Dachoy Megalchin, the princes, his brothers, would take the haircut on Erev Yom Tov, that is coming out in the middle of the week, who lo megalech, but he would not. His haircut is literally from Friday to Friday, not in the middle of the week, even if it happens to be the day before a Yom Tov. Inami, ligluchi, min safro demali Shabbat. Another point of difference would be taking a haircut Friday morning. Safro is the morning of Mali Shabbat. Mali Shabbat is Friday. Achay Megalchin, the brothers would be able to take a haircut at that point. Ihu lo Megalech ad Panya. He, Avshalom, being a Nozir Olam, is allowed to take a haircut only ad Panya, close to evening. The Gemara here asks a question based on that which we mentioned quite a bit earlier. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Dalon Mebeis, and you can see there the parallel arrow. The Pasuk had mentioned that Avshalom mentioned that he wanted to take care of his vow, and it was after 40 years. So that the Pasuk opened up with at the conclusion of 40 years, so the story involving Avshalom transpired. Hani Arboim Shana Mayavitai, what's the nature of these 40 years? It was at the end of 40. What happened 40 years earlier? Reb Noroi Oimer Mishum Rabbi Yeshua. Leketz, it was at the end of 40, Mem Shana Sheshalahen Melech. The Jewish people 40 years earlier had turned to the prophet Shmuel, the prophet Samuel, and asked of them, can we, the Jewish people, can we have a king? Tana, the source tells us, Oysa Shana, Sheshala and Melech, the year that they had turned to the prophet Shmuel, requesting to have a king, he Shnas Eser Lishmuel Ramasi. It was the 10th year of Shmuel's rule. He ruled as a prophet, as a leader of the Jewish people. Haramasi is a reference to Ramah, the place where Shmuel lived. So it was during the 10th year of Shmuel's rule that they turned to him asking for a king. So from that point, 40 years later, the story involving Avshalom had taken place. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.